F2. Number 21A.
Science and health. And Paul could see that if the doctrine would not be established in the church leaders, and then the church leaders would be an example to everyone in the church to establish signs in each one, that Christianity would go lost, and it did go lost. Christianity, as Jesus founded it, did go lost because of this. You remember how Mrs. Eddy once asked a class why it was that Christianity did go lost. Was it because of the letter or of the spirit? And so naturally everybody asked, it was because of the lack of spirit. She said no, it was because of the lack of the letter. If they had known the letter, there would have been a real chance to imbibe the spirit of it. But because they did not have the letter, did not see the letter, they couldn't imbibe the spirit of it. So let's see that letter, you see, the signs of it really also has its place and its proper place and its big place. So that first we get the letter of the signs, then little by little we will get the spirit of the signs too. So he said, these are an example to the believers. Take, that's so nice, you see, take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. See, he says, take heed unto the doctrine. He said, be just always on the watch that the signs of this idea is kept pure. That is kept pure. All other things don't matter. It needs an enormous sense of impersonality, an enormous sense of self-abnegation, self-consecration. But it's the only power there is, because in our own self there is nothing that is anything good. Only in that unity with that principle lies power. This is the gospel, a power unto salvation for everyone that believes, that has this scientific understanding in this principle. So continuing them, he says, in that doctrine, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. Says, in that way, by embodying the doctrine of Christianity, you heal yourself, you save yourself, and you save the world. Then you can be a saving agent in the world. Therefore he asked Timothy to start at home, to be first an example himself. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? So we have first within ourselves to be watchful that we exemplify the science of this idea, the science of the pure science, the science of Christianity, the science of Christian science. That's our only care. And not to see what the other one does, and if he still has some disadvantages, still some shortcomings, if he doesn't do things as we would like him to do it, all that doesn't matter. Let's keep the idea of science pure. And let that be the main concern of us. People will change. That a true idea has a Christ. And as we'll then see in Philemon, in the epistle of Philemon, how it changes then the man. So we must look away first from people and really love to see the purity of this idea. Let them learn first to show piety at home. If any provide not for his own, and especially for those in his own house, he has denied the faith. and is worse than an infidel. Infidel. All right. Well, so in this way I just tried to introduce the tone, really, of this pastoral epistle. Just to try to push consciousness further to the foreside of the holy city and see what is the purpose of that. Now, we get then the message, and I will take that very quickly and just pinpoint the law, just the attitude which is in here. See, therefore, in his first letter to Timothy, to his son, his own son in the faith, he tells him which ideas he has to embody in order to embody the true doctrine. See, he tells them that he has to embody the idea of the pure doctrine. Therefore, he has to embody the idea of the signs of mind, the idea of the signs of spirit, the idea of the signs of soul, the idea of the signs of principle, the idea of signs of life. See, that's what he has to embody. And he shows what would endanger this. He uncovers to him awakes in him the realization what really could be at work to hinder him not to embody the idea of science. He says, in mind, that therefore we should embody the true doctrine by being active in this doctrine, to be a pattern of this doctrine, you see. Therefore, we should embody the idea of this science. And that which is against it, which endangers to be such a representative of the signs of mind, is if we have useless talk, ignorant assertions, arguing about metaphysics. You will find more and more, you see, that in the measure as you begin to touch the holiness of this science, the sublimity of this science, that you are not, that you just don't want to discuss and argue with other people about this science. You just feel, that's what I know, and that's that. Well, if the other one doesn't understand it and doesn't want it or looks at it differently, that's his business. I just can't anymore argue about what is right and what is wrong. So you get the sense, you see, of mind, that which endangers, really, to be a representative of the signs of mind is to argue endlessly about metaphysics, endlessly about this point and that point and the other point. And you must excuse me if sometimes I appear really in that way, sometimes a bit uninterested when you perhaps speak a lot of metaphysics about me. Sometimes I just can't anymore. That doesn't mean you just go on and ask me things, but you will feel that as you go on, you have a feeling, well, that's what it is, yeah, when you get the science of it. And then you just feel, well, if the other one has a different view on it, different view of what matter is and of what mortal mind is and of thought is and so on, well, that's their business. And they will come along as long as I try more and more to embody the idea of science of mind. And Paul has seen that this arguing too long, don't argue too long about anything. If you come together, exchange views, that's all right. But when you come to a point where it's not revelation, stop it. Just stop it. Go to your God. Go to your God. And your God should first be the textbook and the concordance to the textbook. If you have any question about anything, dig in the textbook. Take the concordance. Look up every reference on it, not just one or two. not just one or two. See, that's how we were taught over years and years and years, that if we wanted to know something, we couldn't go and ask the teacher. We couldn't go and ask. At the beginning, when I was a student of Mr. Dolin, actually full of enthusiasm and so on, I would write him long letters, you know, and asking him, now, John, how is this and this, and why is this so and so and so? And I would get a letter back, a very jolly, nice letter. Well, dear old Max, old boy, how are you and how are things going with you? I'm so glad you are thinking. Everything is well over here. Bye-bye. He never gave me an answer. Never. Actually, after two or three times, I just knew that's no use to ask him. Because he has always thought that it's in the book. It's in the textbook. There you can find it. And he always thought that if we want to have a question settled on metaphysics, say, if you are not clear what is matter really, well, he always thought as well there is a concordance and you can look up what matter is in the textbook. And he says, but look up every reference of it, and not just one or two or three. You see, that's why you find that so many students of Christian Science, after years and years and years, are not clear at all on the most simple metaphysical propositions. Why? Because they take what someone has said on this question, and it's one aspect, but it's not all the aspects. And you begin to realize during this week that any question can never be answered just in one aspect. It has always many aspects. It has an aspect from the plane of divine science, it has an aspect from the plane of absolute Christian science, it has an aspect from the plane of Christian science. It has an aspect from the point of view of the world, and it has an aspect from the point of view of the Christ and of Christianity and of science. And only as we dig into this question and go through all the references, well, you get the picture which fits and which answers all aspects. Then you know it. And then it's finished. Then you have it once for all. So Paul just could see that. You just could see that the science of Christianity could not be established, what he says, by useless talk, ignorant assertions, by arguing about things. It's prayer. The textbook starts with prayer. Prayer is that which is necessary to get an answer. Then he goes on to spirit and shows that we should embody the pure doctrine by worshipping in all godliness, professing godliness with good works, and that naturally which tries to destroy this aspect is if we materialize worship. Any materialization of worship just is poison to the signs of being. Then in soul he shows that we should embody this doctrine as representing God in all humility, obeying the rules of God. And so what is the danger, he says, towards this humility is really pride, pretense. You say pretense or pretense? Pretense, you say. Whereas humility is that which is furthering the idea. In principle, he says that which establishes the idea of science within us is that we constantly nourish our faith through study, that we constantly really exercise in godliness and study the books. He tells them, study the books, study the principles. That's how you establish within yourself the science of this principle. by taking heed unto the doctrine. And he says, what endangers it are the seducing spirits. What endangers it are those doctrines of devil and so on, which he enumerates quite a few. He says, that profane and wise fables lies in hypocrisy, seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. You see, he says, that which really is a danger to the establishment of these signs is that one listens and is interested too much in any other doctrine by saying, well, there is something good in there and something good in there. There may be, but it doesn't do a thing. We see that in science we must have that presentation of truth which not only gives us some isolated truth. It is certainly so that in every religion there is something good in it. Nobody will deny it. But because there is something good in it, that shouldn't make us put our head too much into those things, because we know that which is necessary today is the science of it. That science which connects all these truths in one truth. So it's that fact arranging activity which is much more important than just the fact finding activity. So, and you see also, as you have seen this week, that really a higher sense of truth, a higher sense of reality, is something which is being born to a man, to us, which can only be attained through a birth. Well, that means only by contemplating and pondering the truth, and not by acquiring lots of truth in hundreds and hundreds of books of religion, taking here there something good and there something good. That's all right, but it doesn't help us. And so let's see that the establishment of the principle of science within us is a birth that can only go on if we keep our eye on the ball. There is, how does she say, there is no excellency except in working in a direct line. Something like that. Huh? See, that's what we must see. There is no excellency except work in the direct line. Where a direct line is where one point follows the next point in a definite direction. And not just by picking all over the place something, but it's a birth from one point where we have seen something fundamental, then by pondering it and by loving it and by guarding it and by valuing it, it begins to unfold in a direct line. Then it shows in life that really that which embodies the true doctrine is if we have paternal, fatherly love, that by supporting all that has a living value, whereas that really, you see that devotion to it, whereas really that which really tries to be a great danger to us is to criticize. Criticize is the counterfeit of fatherhood. See, fatherhood is that which supports, maintains. Fatherhood is that which supports every little flash of light, every little glimmer of spirituality, and does not put the finger always on that which is not yet perfect. That's criticism. That's not fatherhood. The fatherhood sense is that which supports that which is good and leaves the rest to be resolved by that which is good. We must have within ourselves that certainty and trust that if we can support the remnant, the seed within each one, that will take care of the whole man, that will take care of all the problems. You know how it goes in that paragraph on scientific obstetrics? that a true idea has not a single element of error. And this truth removes properly whatever is offensive. It even removes it properly, not even improperly. It removes it so properly, so gently, so helpingly, so lovingly. So let's see that we must be a Timothy. We must be a Timothy. We just can't be a help to this idea unless we are a Timothy, where we lose every sense of criticism. If we can't lose a sense of criticism and feel he should have done that and he should have done this and why didn't he do this and why didn't he do that, we will destroy this idea. We'll destroy it. But if we have that wonderful sense of unity where each one fathers the other one, where each one just supports and helps and loves the remnant in each one, then we will go somewhere. Then we will also have that motherly trust that this idea will properly remove whatever is offensive. We don't need to be afraid that people have weaknesses, that they make errors. We don't need to be afraid of that. These errors in people, these shortcomings in people can't do a thing to the idea as long as we support the idea, as long as we see the idea is all that matters, as long as we culture the idea, as long as we nourish the idea, as long as we support everything in everyone which is of that nature of idea. That takes care of the rest. And you know, as a mother, we really should know that when a baby is 2 days old, well, what does it do? What wonder is there? Crying and having the swaddling clothes always wet, and I don't know what, you see. You only have worked with it. And yet, you wouldn't give it away. You wouldn't let anything be said about that baby. It's the most beautiful baby. It's the nicest baby ever born. It's the baby that just is above everything. That's how we must mother and father each one. If we people want to go somewhere, if on us should not be the anathema of a Judas that we forsook the idea, then we must center this idea in a loving way. In a loving way. We can't blame anybody on this world who doesn't know science if the world goes pop. But we know it. We know it. And the blame will be on us who know it. So let's build up within us that sense that man is the idea of science. And all that he's working for is for the idea of science. We are not working for ourselves, nor for another person, nor for friends, nor for patients. We are working fundamentally for the idea of science. This shows us truth that which keeps the idea of the doctrine pure is that if we have respect for the works of Christ and support the workers in Christ and labor in the word and doctrine. See, he even goes so far that he says, well, let all those who really inwardly from the best they can and in the measure of the best they can, let's respect them. There is no one is an angel among us. No one is faultless among us. No one. But let's respect that in each one, what he has wrought through the Christ. And if we can do that, well, then we unite in one manhood. So let's respect the work and all what the deeds and everything that is being done by everyone. And that matters. That's man, you know. All the rest isn't man anyway. So let's just see that is man as the idea of the science of truth. And then in love, he says, another point is that we live in contentment. Says that we live in contentment. Because that which really endangers the doctrine is the sense of trying to gain something from it. The love of money, he says, envy and strife, all that, he says. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Supposing that gain is godliness, and so on. See, love, if the, as an idea of love, it shows, let's see the signs of love. Namely, that love has no human needs. It's quite a big proposition, you see, which slowly and slowly we have to recognize and to be seen. So that there is nothing selfish going on in this idea. That everything is done for the love of this idea, for the sake of this idea, for the sake of the idea of God, for the glorification of the idea of God. I have to stop here. After a while, when Paul was for the second time in prison in Rome, he wrote his last letter, which he wrote against Timothy in Ephesus. And he gave Timothy another boost to stand for the signs of Christianity and not to be depressed, because he could see that it isn't easy to represent the signs of Christianity, the doctrine of Christianity, especially not in Ephesus, that center of heathen religion, without that Timothy would have gone through many persecutions. So he said, in your doctrine, in the embodiment of your doctrine, prove yourself worthy, even if that is through much endurance. He says, if we endure, we shall reign with him, with Christ. What persecutions I endured, Paul writes, out of them all the Lord delivered me. So he tells them to stand. The Lord stood with me and strengthened me, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work, and will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom. You see, he shows the end is always the heavenly kingdom. The end is not Christianity. The end is not trying to prove spiritual power over material power for one's own sake. That the end of it is the demonstration of spiritual power over material power for the sake of the kingdom of heaven, for the sake of the idea, and not for one's own sake. So in this letter he asks Timothy to prove himself worthy in the doctrine. You see, in the first letter he just showed him to keep the doctrine pure and showed what could defile the doctrine. Now, having shown that, he shows him a bit more, namely, that he has to stand in that purity of doctrine, and that he shouldn't be afraid to stand in it, that it would preserve him. That if he would prove himself worthy of representing the signs of men, that that would also preserve us. He shows this attitude through seven subjects, and I just take them quickly just to impress thought what Paul asks of us, how to preserve and prove ourselves worthy in the doctrine. He asks them as in the tone of mind, first to have the might of faith, to stand in the might of faith, not to give in that pure doctrine, not to give in. and to be of a sound mind, and not of a craven spirit. See, he says, well, just remain with all your might, one with this faith. You see, it's always about faith or gospel, or faith or gospel, you will hear through this epistle. In the second subject of spirit, he says that we should keep the veneration of the gospel.